Translation. The Lord enjoyed his pastimes, both in this world and in other worlds, higher planets, specifically in the association of the Yadu dynasty. At leisure hours offered by night, he enjoyed the friendship of conjugal love with women. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord enjoyed in this world with his pure devotees. Although he is the personality of Godhead and is transcendental to all material attachment, he nevertheless exhibited much attachment for his pure devotees on the earth, as well as for the demigods who engage in his service in the heavenly planets as powerful delegated directors in the management of all material activities. He displayed special attachment for his family members, the Yadus, as well as for his 16,000 wives, who had the opportunity to meet him in the leisure hours of night. All these attachments of the Lord are manifestations of his internal potency, of which the external potency is only a shadow representation. In the Skanda Purana, Prabhasa Kanda, in the topics between Lord Shiva and Gauri, there is confirmation of his internal potential manifestations. There is mention of the Lord's meeting with 16,000 cowherd damsels, although he is the Hamsa, transcendental supersoul and maintainer of all living entities. The 16,000 cowherd damsels are a display of 16 varieties of internal potencies. This will be more elaborately explained in the 10th canto. It is said there that Lord Krishna is just like the moon, and the internal potential damsels are like the stars around the moon. Om Gyana Timanandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Om Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sorry, I forgot to turn my phone off. Let me just turn it off. This theme of Prabhupada referring to the 10th canto is a topic, or it's a statement more or less, that Srila Prabhupada has raised a number of times in this chapter. And sometimes there are things in this chapter, in these verses, that you don't find later on in the 10th canto, where they are more elaborately explained. And sometimes you get insights into what's going to happen in the 10th canto by referring to these insights in this particular chapter. And I'll give you a couple of examples that I came across recently. In this particular chapter, by the way, there is about three verses that are care protection related. And one of them is very important, very particularly, which you've already studied earlier on. I think it's number 4 in this chapter, 334. And it talks about how Krishna subdued 7 bulls whose noses were not pierced. Abhida was the word. And when you read the pastime later on, you don't hear about their noses not being pierced. You hear about them being vicious, pointed horns, and that they even smelt a kshatriya, they wanted to pummel him into the ground. But you don't hear about them having you don't hear them about their noses were not pierced. It's very important, actually, because that whole pastime is about Krishna's prowess, Krishna's power. And anyone who'd worked with bulls knows that if you grab them by the nose, you got them. You control them. So even big, nasty, vicious bulls, if you hold them by the nose, you control them. So these bulls didn't have that weakness built in because their noses were not pierced. And also, although it's not elaborately described, he didn't grab their nose to control them. He simply expanded himself into seven times, and then he basically pulled them along. In other words, he wasn't pulling them by the nose. He was just, doesn't even indicate clearly about a rope, although in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada gives the example, just like a child would pull a toy goat. So you can imagine a rope around the neck of the goat, and you're pulling it along. Anyway, so Mother Krishna, just by his power, was able to subjugate these bulls. If you want to get a hint of what it might be like, go up to our Goshala and say hello to Hari. He's like a bodybuilder without bodybuilding. He's packed full of muscles. So imagine grabbing him by the neck and say, come on, let's go. Anyway, so Krishna did that. So it's a very important reference. And it's also a reference in the field of cow protection, because sometimes we are assailed by sentimentalists who say, not just sentimentalists, anti-animal traction propagandists. They don't want us using animal traction. They say it's wrong. We're fundamentally exploiting the animals. But here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's specifically pointed out that you control a bull by its nose. So that reference, 334, it's indirect. But there's another one in the 8th chapter that is very, very direct. It says you control a bull by its nose. Anyway, the point I'm making is that that little snippet of information was in this chapter. And the 10th counter, when you read it, you don't find that snippet. But actually, you've got to tie the both things in. The picture's becoming more complete. And similarly, in the pastime of Krishna going, I think we've also had that story too, where Krishna and Satyabhama went to the heavenly planets. And they met Indra and Indra's wife. And Indra was worshipping Lord Krishna along with his wife. And then next minute, Krishna steals the parijata. Well, he didn't steal it because it all belongs to him. He took the parijata aromatic tree because she wanted it. And he brought it anyway. So Indra suddenly flipped from being a worshipper to becoming an enemy and got his army out and wanted to attack Krishna. But one of the, you could say, subtle things, or not subtle things, details was in this chapter describes how his wives instigated it. The wives of Indra instigated him doing something about Krishna. Now, this is that particular verse was about, you could say, being henpecked. It seems that Krishna was henpecked by Satyabhama and he wanted to get her this tree. And Indra was henpecked by his wives and therefore he went to war with Krishna because of the instigation of his wives. Kind of tied into this, because this verse is also about interrelationship with males and females. And the point I'm making is, there's probably a number of verses like that in this chapter, that although they're not expanding the full story, Prabhupada refers to 10th canto, there's very important information in there, which helps you understand many aspects of the future verses in the 10th canto. So, Prabhupada here, the verse, is talking about the importance of the Yadu dynasty. And a dynasty is a line of hereditary rulers. And the Yadu dynasty, you've got to go back to someone called Yayati. I don't know how far back that was, but it's a long time ago, and his son was Yadu. And then, of course, of time, there was someone called Madhu and someone called Vrishni. Actually, Yadu, Madhu, and Vrishni. And this is where these dynasties come from. So it's a genealogy that comes back from a long time before. So Krishna had an affinity towards that Yadu dynasty. And you can imagine there must have been a lot of Yadus. Sometimes the various dynasties, they were withdrawn. Various things happened. And we hear in the later canto, the Bhagavatam, where the whole Yadu dynasty is kind of by a fratricidal battle, they all disappear by fighting. So sometimes they're manifest, sometimes they're not manifest. So the Yadu dynasty is vast, but Krishna, particularly, it says here, specifically the Yadus. Another point is mentioned here is that, well, the Bhagavatam doesn't care about the newspapers, doesn't care about what you hear on the TV. It tells you straight, there's the earth and there are other worlds, higher worlds. We don't like to think about there being higher worlds than us people on this earth. We don't like the idea that we are somehow or other not the best thing in the galaxy. But the Bhagavatam doesn't care about that viewpoint. In fact, interesting, Srila Prabhupada, he just told them straight out. They didn't do this, they didn't do that. He didn't care what they said. This is what the Bhagavatam says, and for Srila Prabhupada, that is the truth. So we, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we're learning to take our reference for reality from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, Krishna's pastimes were not just on the earth. They were also in other places too. In fact, that pastime where Krishna went with Satyabhama, that was the place of Indra. Indra's kind of an interesting character. So I shouldn't use the word character. He's a king. He's our ruler of this universe. He's such a very important person. But Krishna comes, he leaves the spiritual world to tackle the enemies of Indra. That famous verse, Eti Chamsa Kalapam Sa Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam Indra Yi Vyakalam Lokam. I can't remember the last verse, last word. Thank you. He comes again and again every year, every age. But he comes to tackle the enemies of Indra. So sometimes Indra does weird stuff that you wouldn't expect for someone who's a worshipper of the Lord. In fact, in that pastime of Satyabhama, he was praying to the Lord. He wanted some of the desires fulfilled, and next minute is attacking the Lord. So sometimes those who are influenced by modes, they're very devoutly devotional one minute, and next minute they seem to be plummeting into the modes of passion and ignorance the next. So we can never let off our guard. We may feel blissful today, but tomorrow we may feel rampaging mind in a different way. So we have to be very careful with our consciousness. So the Lord, he comes to relieve the distress of Indra. There's also, so what this pastime was there, and also the pastime in later on the 10th canto, we're going to hear about the Indra Yajna that Krishna's father was going to do, and Krishna said, no, don't worship Indra, better to worship the land and the cows. And Indra got not just a bit upset, he got really murderously upset. Which is interesting that sometimes the demigods don't seem to follow the same morality that we do. You know, you can imagine someone, you walk in and someone doesn't offer you the right kind of appreciation. You don't want to just kill them. You don't think about killing them. But it seems like Indra has that tendency. Didn't go his way. He wants to start killing you, and not just killing you like simply, but tornadoes and hurricanes or whatever else. Anyway, it's another cow snippet because Krishna got the name Govinda, which means one who gives place to the cows. It means one who is wanting cows, increasing the cows, increasing the land, increasing the living entities. So Krishna, another point here is that Krishna is not some dry, boring god. We often get that picture, at least myself from my Christian background. God was kind of a scary person. Someone who was out there somewhere. And generally, he wasn't very happy with us. He was kind of he was scary, actually. He wasn't very, people prayed to him, but at the same time, there was a kind of, you know, a fearfulness there because of the persona that was presented about him. But here, this talking about Krishna is twice it's mentioned that he's having fun. He's pleasing. He's into giving pleasure, and he's also enjoying. He's not just having a boring old time being God. He's having a lot of fun being God. He's Atmarama, he's full of pleasure. And as devotees of Krishna, then we can also experience a little snippet that sometimes when we're in the external potency, We experience Krishna through the reflected energy. And when we're more in the internal energy, then we experience Krishna consciousness more directly. So this is so Krishna is very dear to these devotees. And I'd say that this is generally not my kind of verse about gopis and Madhurya Ras. And I made a request to have my class diverted, but I was asked to do it because they needed someone. And my wife said I have to do it, so I'm doing it. So excuse me. So I've got a lot of books to read to hide behind the real stuff. Okay. So it's very interesting here that, sometimes Krishna, he appears to be henpecked, but actually he's not reciprocating with the beauty of a wife or the charms of a wife. He's reciprocating with the devotion of the wives and the devotees. Krishna's wives don't have to be beautiful. Krishna's coward girlfriends don't have to be beautiful. They are beautiful, but they don't have to be. It's the devotion that is what Krishna is reciprocating with. So Satyabhama, she was beautiful. People wanted to marry her, but he reciprocated with her because she was his devotee. So these pastimes are also similar. I just want to refer to this. It says here in the Skanda Purana, Prabhas Kanda, in the topics between Lord Shiva and Gauri. I thought, that'd be great. Let me do that research. Let me find that reference. I went to the Skanda Purana, Prabhas Kanda, and I was faced with 400 chapters. I thought, I can't go through that. We may know that the Skanda Purana has got 100,000 verses. And sometimes, if you want to throw someone off the scent, you would say, it's in the Skanda Purana. knowing there's no way of finding it. We may do that. It's in the Bhagavatam somewhere. It's a bit unfair. Anyway, so I'm assuming I haven't got reference to the writing of the Goswamis that Srila Prabhupada is consulting, but I can estimate it's in there. In those purports that Srila Prabhupada is reading, this is mentioned. Maybe it gives a reference exactly where it is. I don't know. So I couldn't find either reference. I know some devotees do quote the Sanskrit, but he didn't give the reference. One Maharaj, he quoted the Sanskrit at this particular point, but he didn't give the reference to it, so I couldn't hone in on it. Anyway, my honing in it would only be to confirm what Srila Prabhupada said, but he said it's there in the Skanda Purana, in the Prabhas Kanda. This is mentioned. Now, this verse is talking about the conjugal love with women, and the first thing it's mentioned is the 16,000 wives of Krishna. So, let me see what the reference is for that one. Let's see here. I've got a number of them here. The 16,000 wives, they're also the pastime of Satyabhama. It kind of related to that. Which one is it? Here we go. Here we go. This one. So you may recall that at some point, Narada Muni, he wanted to visit the palaces of Krishna to see what was going on. So in that pastime there, it describes many things. And in the chapter after, it gives a little insight into this nocturnal dynamics that's going on. So I'm going to read it a little bit now. Just one verse. This is from the first canto. This is 10th canto, chapter 70, text number 1. Don't do the Sanskrit. He's there. Shukadev Goswami said, as dawn approached, the wives of Lord Madhava, each embraced around the neck by her husband, cursed the crowing roosters. The ladies were disturbed that now they would be separated from him. That's the imagery. So they're lying in their beds with Krishna's arms wrapped around their necks. That's this leisure hours offered by night. This is the Madhurya Ras This is the most intimate relationship that these wives have. They also have children by Krishna. Very, very intimate interactions of these wives and him. Generally, this kind of intimacy goes on at night time. Therefore, it's been referred to here that this is what is going on at night time. And another verse where it describes how maybe that's the previous one. Let's have a look. Oh, here it is, yes. This is from the 10th canto, chapter 69. Somewhere Lord Krishna was found enjoying the company of a particular wife by exchanging joking words with her. Somewhere else he was found engaged along with his wife in religious ritualistic functions. Somewhere Krishna was found engaged in matters of economic development. And somewhere else he was found enjoying family life according to the regulative principles of the Shastras. And Prabhupada, in the Krishna book, he mentions, joking conversations take place during the night time, whereas religious rituals, economic development, and family enjoyment occur during both the day and the night. So the Sanskrit word is karma. Kamo, that sense gratification. So these things happen between intimate relations, between husbands and wives. And this is what's going on with Krishna. Again, it has, you could say, external energy or the external potency dynamics to it. But it's all on the internal platform. I'll go on. It talks about these 16,000 cowherd damsels. I'll read a few snippets of that pastime. And particularly mentions here, the 16,000 cowherd damsels are a display of 16 varieties of internal potencies. I didn't really know where to find them, but I found something that I thought was pretty close, so I'll just read those. Anyway, it gives you the idea. This is from the 10th canto, chapter 39, text 53 to 55, and it says, encircling the Lord and worshipping him were Nanda, Sunanda, and his other personal attendants, Sanaka and the other Kumaras, Brahma, Rudra, and other chief demigods, the 9 chief Brahmanas, and the best of the saintly devotees, headed by Prahlad, Narada, and Uparichara Vasu. Each of these great personalities was worshipping the Lord by chanting sanctified words of praise in his own unique mood. Also in attendance were the Lord's principal internal potencies, Shri, Pushti, Gir, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ila, and Urja, as were his material potencies, Vidya, Avidya, and Maya, and his internal pleasure potency, Shakti. Okay, this is interesting, or it's important in relation to the potencies. In the purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains the Lord's potencies mentioned in these verses. Shri is the potency of wealth, Pushti that of strength, Gir knowledge, Kanti beauty, Kirti fame, and Tushti renunciation. These are the Lord's 6 opulences. Ila is his Bhu Shakti, also known as Sandini, the internal potency of whom the element earth is an expansion. Urja is his internal potency for performing pastimes. She expands as the Tulasi plant in this world. Vidya and Avidya, knowledge and ignorance, are external potencies who caused the living entities liberation and bondage respectively. Shakti is his internal pleasure potency, Khladini, and Maya is an internal potency who is the basis of Vidya and Avidya. The word cha implies the presence of the Lord's marginal energy, the Jiva Shakti, who is subordinate to Maya. Lord Vishnu was being served by all these personified potencies. So I don't know whether this is the exact listing as being described here. It may be that these 16, I say maybe, because I'm sorry, I shouldn't say maybe, but I think it's in that Skanda Purana there, or it's in a commentary that Srila Prabhupada is looking at what those 16 potencies are. So those of you who have access to the commentaries can look it up and will know more clearly. But I would be probably quite confident that a number of these are in that list, and maybe other ones. So here, describing the damsel, we've heard about the wives of Krishna. Sometimes they're kind of, we don't always appreciate or remember their elements of conjugal love. So Krishna is enjoying that conjugal love with his wives, and he's also enjoying that conjugal love with the cowherd damsel. So I'm going to read a couple of sections from it. The whole story unfolds in the chapter 29 of the 10th canto. And here's the kind of setting. Again, because this is about this pastimes going on at night time. This is text 2 from text 2. The moon then rose, anointing the face of the western horizon with the reddish hue of his comforting rays, and thus dispelling the pain of all who watched him rise. The moon was like a beloved husband who returns after a long absence and adorns the face of his beloved wife with red kumkum. I don't think we do that these days. Actually, last night we had such a beautiful sky, reddish like that. So you can imagine this is a similar kind of night sky that Krishna was witnessing. Lord Krishna saw the unbroken disc of the full moon glowing with the red effulgence of newly applied vermilion, as if it were the face of the goddess of fortune. He also saw the Kumuda lotuses opening in response to the moon's presence and the forest gently illumined by its rays. Thus the Lord began to play sweetly on his flute, attracting the minds of the beautiful-eyed gopis. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the other, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back and forth. Some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left milk curling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. Some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants, or rendering personal service to their husbands, but they all gave up these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals, washing themselves, putting on cosmetics, or applying kajal to their eyes. But all the gopis stopped these activities at once, and though their clothes and ornaments were in complete disarray, rushed off to Krishna. So this is the setting, and actually you could see pervertedly, we see this even into modern times. People like this nighttime nocturnal activity. They go out at nighttime, and there's a certain kind of, you know, prime time. Usually after about 2 o'clock it gets a bit too auspicious. You don't find people necessarily in the same mood. They're kind of coming down. But the hours before that, they're kind of getting into it, and they're getting all dressed up. They're going out to engage in this nighttime loving activities as best they can. So this is a perverted reflection of what we see in Krishna. Sometimes you have some glass, and it's got like a distorted, frosty glass. So you're looking at something through it. You're seeing something real, something's happening, but the whole picture is distorted. So what we're seeing in the material world by these nocturnal activities is such a distortion, whereas Krishna's activities are pure. These are all pure devotees of his. So I'm going to read another section. Now, you can read the whole thing yourself in this chapter 29. I'm going to read one little section. It kind of concludes the activities. And I'm reading it because Srila Prabhupada mentions here a certain statement, so I wanted to find out where that was said. Shukadev Goswami said, so all this Rasalila has gone on. It's all passed on. So now he says, smiling upon hearing these despondent words from the gopis, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of mystic yoga, mercifully enjoyed with them, although he is self-satisfied. Among the assembled gopis, the infallible Lord Krishna appeared just like the moon surrounded by stars. He whose activities are so magnanimous made their faces blossom with his affectionate glances, and his broad smiles revealed the effulgence of his jasmine bud-like teeth. So this is the verse that Srila Prabhupada refers to here in his purport. It's interesting. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada didn't get into it, in a sense, with this verse. This verse could be for someone to get into it. It's opening the doors to the gopi pastimes and all the intimacy of it. You could get into the intimacy, more intimacy of Krishna's wives. Srila Prabhupada just touches it and moves on. It's quite extraordinary, really extraordinary. Srila Prabhupada's power of the mind, and he's just carrying on. Ahead of him is the whole 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam. He's trying to finish it all before he leaves. I don't know where the Krishna book fits into all this. When he wrote the Krishna book related to these verses, I don't know. But that was his, you could say, offering to the world. Just in case I don't finish it, let me put it in the Krishna book. So the Krishna book is all these stories of the 10th canto intertwined with purports and embellishments, beautiful embellishments. So there's a certain, one could say, well, he's just keeping it succinct because he's got a lot more to, there's a lot, unlimited things could be said here. So different people with different flavors would extrapolate on this verse more. But I find it quite noted that Srila Prabhupada just completely, soberly dealt with these topics. And actually you can see the whole Bhagavatam is full of many, many topics, and each one is dealt with the same intensity, the same importance, the same opportunities for experiencing the enjoyments that this verse talks about. Ramayan, Rami, there's a lot of pleasing in the verse of the Bhagavatam. There's a lot of enjoyment in the page of the Bhagavatam. And every verse of the Bhagavatam has these pockets of enjoyment that we can tap into if we give it the right attention with the right frame of mind. So they were just some of the things that came to me from this verse. So thank you. We'll have some questions and comments, and then I'm going to ask Srinivas to talk about Lochan Das Thakur. So anybody's got any questions or comments? Prabhu.
Prabhupada spoke about the gopis. He said, if someone's getting disturbed by sex desire, if he thinks of the gopis' pastimes with Krishna, then the sex desire will disappear. But Prabhupada also cautioned that we should not try to imitate Krishna.
Yeah, there are some very intimate statements in this 29th chapter. So what Srinivas is saying, probably all heard him, that if you're feeling lusty, then read about the pastimes of Krishna, and that will purify that lust. Also, we hear a cautionary, don't read the 10th canto until you've read all the preliminary cantos. So there's a lot of verses preliminary. And if you read all those verses and you've followed the trend, then by the time you get to the 10th canto, you're probably pretty cleansed. Okay, any other points or questions? Okay, thank you. So, Srinivas Prabhu, please illuminate us on Lochan Das Thakur. Srinivas is one of the many scholars of Bhaktivedanta Manor, And I just, he walked by and I thought, okay, he's the man to tell us about Lajan Das Thakur.
Okay. I'll speak what I know.
Thank you.
So, Lajan Das Thakur came to Vrindavan. He was instructed by Lord Chaitanya to excavate the holy places. And also he was told by Lord Chaitanya to accept disciples, but he didn't want to accept any disciples. And Lord Chaitanya told him that you get a disciple coming to you who will be a good singer. He can compose bhajans. This is Narottam Das Thakur. So even though Narottam Das Thakur came, Lajan Das Thakur still won't give him initiation. So Narottam Das Thakur was very determined that he told Jiva Goswami initially, he said, what's the use of me living if I can't have a spiritual master? Might as well give up my life. So Jiva Goswami encouraged him to find a way to serve Lajan Das Thakur. So he was going at night time after Lajan Das Thakur did his nature's calls and everything. He used to clean that place up when no one was there. So this happened for a year. And Lajan Das Thakur was thinking, who's cleaning my place up? It looks... And one time he hid in the forest in behind the bushes and he saw Narottam Das Thakur doing it. And he felt very humble. He thought, you're from a prince family, king family, and you're doing this menial service. So after that, he gave him initiation. And then at some point there were three of them, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya and Shyamananda Pandit, who were asked to spread Krishna consciousness in Bengal. He wrote a book called the Chaitanya Mangal. Lajan Das Thakur wrote this book. And in this book it explains pastimes which are not in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat. And Lajan Das Thakur explained one interesting pastime showing how if one maintains material desires, then to get Krishna's mercy will be very difficult. It will take a long time. So this pastime he tells is there was a brahmana in South India. And this brahmana was from a poor family. The family didn't want him. Somehow or other. So he walked all the way to Jagannath Puri. And at that time Lord Chaitanya was on the planet. So this brahmana was seeing Lord Chaitanya, but he couldn't recognize Lord Chaitanya, who Lord Chaitanya was. So he went to Lord Jagannath and he prayed to Lord Jagannath, give me some wealth. I'm very poor family. I need some wealth. And he made a vow that within 7 days, if he doesn't get reciprocation from Lord Jagannath by some message, then he'll enter the ocean and give up his body. So on the 7th day, he went to the ocean, and as he was going to enter, then Vibhishan comes out in a huge form, and he comes like a human on the ocean shore. And his brahmana is thinking, maybe this is Lord Jagannath. So Vibhishan, in India, you don't want to be disturbed by people that disturb the sadhus. So Vibhishan just told him, I am who I am and I don't want to disturb by anyone. And this brahmana was saying, actually, I was going to enter the ocean and give up my body because I haven't got the mercy of Lord Jagannath. I made this vow. So Vibhishan said, okay, you follow me. I'll take you to Lord Jagannath. At that time in the Gambira, Lord Chaitanya was there with his associates. And the associates could see Lord Chaitanya wasn't so happy. So Lord Chaitanya told Govinda, two brahmanas are coming. and you allow them to come in. So one will come close to me, the other one will be at a distance. So Vibhishan went to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya told Vibhishan, you look after this Brahmana, you're his good fortune. So as they were leaving, the other Brahmana asked Lord Chaitanya, Vibhishan, who was this? You will take me to Lord Jagannath. Why you took me to this sannyasi? So Vibhishan said, this is Lord Jagannath. He's non-different. So the poor Brahmana told Vibhishan, take me back to Lord Chaitanya. And the poor Brahmana told Lord Chaitanya, I suffered so much now, I just want to be with you. But Lord Chaitanya told the Brahmana, you pray to Lord Jagannath for wealth. So Vibhishan will look after you in this lifetime. In your next lifetime you can come back to me. So this pastime shows that if someone maintains material desires, to get Krishna's mercy it will take some time. It won't be so quick.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Lochan Das Thakur Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Go Premanandi.